Welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson. This is our new podcast that will give you additional information. I am so excited to have on the line with me Jay Davidson. You know him. He is the founder and the CEO of First American State Bank right here in our community. And Jay Davidson, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk about this big stimulus package that has been passed through out in Washington, D.C., signed by the president. What is it exactly, Jay Davidson?
Well, they call it a stimulus program. It's not a stimulus program. There's a couple of different programs that are coming through. One is the payroll protection plan. Facility, PPP, is what it's called. Another one, a new one that just came out, is Main Street Lending Facility. All this does is attempt to find a government-based solution for a problem that the government created in the first place. And to expand a little bit on this, the government, state, local, regional, city, and federal, have pretty much unanimously shut down business activity, severely impacted everything that's going on with the quarantine. I'm not arguing about the facility of the quarantine. I'm not a doctor. I'm a banker, and I tend to look at things more economic than medical. But this whole shutdown was caused by the government, and now the government's printing trillions of dollars of new money and trying to push it out to small businesses and the public. And it's a very confusing mess. We're in the midst of trying to unravel it right now.
I was talking with a group of girls last night virtually, and several of them were small business people that wanted to apply to get some of this payroll protection or Main Street lending, and they said it's very complicated. They're concerned that the big guys are getting the money. They're not, and they're concerned about fraud. So what's your thoughts on that, Jay Davidson?
I can tell you it's very complex. It's very complex because the federal government devised it. I'm going to really sound negative about the federal government, because I am. I've seen them at work close up and personal. In banking, I'm a highly regulated in a highly regulated industry, and I see what they're doing now, and I absolutely and totally disagree with that action. I don't even have the form of a promissory note that I'm supposed to use to secure my interest in this loan if I make it, for instance. And the promissory notes that we've seen have more blank spaces in them than actual fact. I don't know. And I'm having difficulty as a bank and an SBA lender getting into their computer program to use their online application program to facilitate the loan. So now we have to go to an additional expense of using a third party that has knowledge of how to use this arcane, antiquated, out-of-date program that the SBA set up. Your friend is exactly right. It is confusing not only for the borrower, but I'm sorry, it's confusing for the banker. And then there's a lot of questions on the back end of this deal. You know, there's certain requirements that have to be met in order for this debt to be forgiven in a couple of years. Well, the deciding factor in that is going to be a government bureaucrat. And guess what, folks? We bankers who are making the loans don't know what the criteria is going to be. And there's a lot of ambiguity in it, which means it's subject to interpretation. How do you know that you will meet all their requirements when they haven't published it and when they can change it and when it's at the whim of a bureaucrat? You don't know. So you're taking a loan out and you're not certain that the loan will be forgiven. So if you take the loan out, friends, be certain that you have the cash flow and the capability to pay it back in a worst-case scenario. That's just smart business.
What about fraud? Do you think that there's an opportunity for fraud with all of this?
Of course, there's an opportunity for fraud even in the best of times. And in the worst of times, when people are panicking, emotional, scared to death, reacting to every sight, sound, and rumor that goes out there, you bet there's a potential fraud. But you know what? You're exposed to that every day. It's just more intense today.
So, Jay, I think that there's a couple of things that are in my mind, and that is that we need to get back to foundational principles, I think, is in as much you mentioned the word promissory note. Promissory note is based on the word promise. Then the promise is that you sign there and that you are going to do everything within your power to make sure that you pay that loan back. And I think that we have kind of gotten away from realizing that we have to be responsible for the promises that we make. And that was something that was very foundational to the banking industry that made it a success, where there was this agreement between the banker and the person that you would lend the money to, that they were going to do everything they could to make sure that they paid that money back. But just to be sure, there was also collateral that was pledged for that as an additional principle or foundation to make sure that that happened. And we've kind of moved away from that. We saw that in the housing crisis, where people just walked away from their homes when things got bad. What's your thoughts about that now?
Well, that's a profound topic. A lot of business is based on trust, but at least in banking, if I'm lending money out, I intend to be repaid. That the borrower has made use of my capital or my assets. And when he doesn't pay me back, he impairs my capital. I take losses on it. So I'm pretty serious about collecting. Having said that, I do everything I can on the front end of a loan to be sure that the individual has the cash flow or the capacity to repay. And that's my primary source of repayment, is their ability to make that payment every month or every quarter is required. And if I have to go to the collateral side of the house and take the collateral, that's an endpoint. It's difficult for me to get paid back. I never collect 100% if I go that way. It's a foreclosure, and there's a lot of issues there. So it's not a desirable way for a bank to collect on a loan. Now, you talked about promises and keeping one's word and so forth. One of the first bankers was Knights Templar, I believe in the 11th or 12th century. Believe it or not, this group of Catholic priests who were warrior priests acted as bankers. You could go to a Knights Templar cathedral in Rome, deposit a certain amount of money, and then you could travel over to the Holy Land and go to another Knights Templar. And with the proper identification, that group of Knights Templar would hand you the money. So it was an amazingly efficient process, but it was based on promises. I hate to tell you this, folks, but the dollar bill you hold in your pocket, pull it out and look at the face that says Federal Reserve note, promise to repay. We don't have a gold backing, a gold standard to hold up the U.S. dollar. That piece of paper is backed by the promise of the federal government and your belief in the federal government to make right on that payment, that dollar will be worth something in the future. It's a piece of paper, and without the promise, it means nothing. You could burn it, and it means nothing. So consider that. You know, you think this the value of the U.S. dollar is sacrosanct and it can never go down. Well, folks, it does go down, goes up and down. It used to be based on having enough gold to back that dollar up. Today, it's not. And today, the federal government, since 2008, has printed over $6 trillion of those little dollars. $6 trillion. They ballooned the Federal Reserve's balance sheet in 2008. It was $850 billion. And today, it's almost $7 trillion. Now, if you don't think that that's going to have a devaluing effect on the United States dollar, think again. These politicians don't understand the effect of debt. They don't get that, and maybe they don't care, because they don't have to pay it back. You pay it back, I pay it back, our grandkids will be paying it back. It's a burden on us, folks. And the amount of dollars that the Fed and Treasury and Congress has authorized is mind-boggling. And if you look at 2008 Great Recession, that so-called stimulus of printing the $4.5 trillion in QE 1 through 4 and dropping interest rates to zero, that stimulus had no effect on the economy. You can look at GDP growth, and it was flat, almost flat, during that entire time. So the answer is not, and I'm sorry for being so long-winded here, but the answer is not in another government program, because they're not effective. The answer is in private enterprise, and that's a whole other topic.
Well, and I totally agree with you on that, Jay. I wonder, though, I mean, this is such a unique situation. So President Trump, he's getting this information about this coronavirus, and there's so many unknowns. There's uncertainty. And human beings like to have certainty. They like to think they know what's going to be happening in the future. So this uncertainty and not knowing about this particular virus is very difficult to put your arms around it, because you just don't know. So Trump is being told that there's going to be all these deaths. We don't know for sure what was happening in Wuhan, China, because I'm pretty sure that the Chinese were not honest with us about the disease and you know, all the deaths there. So there's all this unknown. And Trump is getting bombarded from all sides about protecting the American people. They shut down the economy, which there's all those extenuating circumstances of economic virus for people. They're concerned about, can they pay their rent? Will their business still be open? You know, have I lost my job? All those things that are very important out there. And it seems like politicians and bureaucrats and these interested parties have not cared about it. But it seemed to me like it kind of painted Trump into a box. He had to do something here. People lost their jobs. And in order to maybe prevent some civil unrest, they do this huge package, which I'm concerned about. But I mean, what was his choices on this?
Well, do you mean, did he have a choice whether to shut down the United States economy? Is that you're at?
Yeah. So, well, right. He's faced with this unknown that people say are going to kill, you know, many, many people. And
right.
So what does he do about that? He shuts down the economy and realizes that, you know, people have this economic virus now, and to try to prevent civil unrest, perhaps, you know, tries to give some assurance there. It seems like he was in a really tough spot.
Oh, absolutely. He was in a tough spot, and I think he made the wrong decision. But I don't want to minimize the each person's feeling about death, about a virus, a pandemic. I mean, it's a serious issue, and we all need to take steps individually. And some of you may believe as collectively. I tend not to believe in collectivism. But at least individually, we need to take steps to protect ourselves. President Trump, I believe, reacted to the panic that I think government officials, Trump included, and the media definitely have exacerbated. They've created a panic here like I've never seen in 70 years. I'm just blown away by the abject fear that people are exhibiting, the total helplessness that people feel, the inability to do anything on their own. This is the collectivist ideal world. And this is the effect of panic and fear, and then people mistakenly going to their federal government and asking the federal government to help them. So somebody creates this panic, then guess what? The government's going to be the hero and step in and take care of you. And folks, if you believe that, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn that you might want to buy from me. I think you need to be a lot more careful, a lot more circumspect in giving up your freedom for a little bit of safety. Or as Ben Franklin says, you'll have neither.
Well, true that. Now, in one of the most recent press conferences, President Trump did make the case for the Constitution. You know, there's been pressure for him to shut down the whole country, and he said this is should be a state-by-state issue. And I totally agree with him on that. And I feel like these overreaching politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties that have been shutting down their government, they don't want to take responsibility now. So if they can talk Trump into shutting down the whole country, then that gives them cover. And I hope that he continues to honor the Constitution on that, Jay Davidson.
I agree with you. I do hope that President Trump will come back to the Constitution and abide by its edicts. And if you read the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, you'll see one theme going throughout the entire three documents, founding documents of our nation. And all of the requirements, rules, regulations, amendments, rights accrue to the individual, to the citizen, to his or her freedom, and they restrict the government's activity. And the founding fathers understood this fact that government would grow. It's inevitable that government seeks power and accrues to itself power. And we're seeing one of the most expressive power grabs in the history of the United States. Maybe during FDR's time in 1941, there was a similar grab, but there was a very clear outside our borders danger. That was Japan and Germany. Now you could say, well, we have a virus. Well, you know what? We've had viruses throughout the ages, folks. We've had pandemics throughout the ages. You know, the AIDS virus killed 36 million American people in the world. 36 million. The H3N1 killed a couple million. And that was only about 40 years ago. There's been pandemics throughout the ages. And believe it or not, the human race has survived. I'm not minimizing the individual toll on people, but I object to the federal government making it worse, making it more difficult.
So what do we do about this, Jay Davidson? As we are marching through this, we're going to come out on the other side. What do we do about this?
First and foremost, I don't know the answer to that, Kim. I think each individual has to seek his own answer. I have thought long and hard about my own individual answer to that very good question. And I object to the federal government shutting down business. And I believe they've done it capriciously and arbitrarily and inappropriately. I don't believe that the governor has the right or the mayor has the right to shut down commerce. I think the American public would react much more positively to this whole thing if they were educated, if they were asked to join up and to help out. I think you'd see a resounding response, a positive response from people. And they would self-regulate without this heavy hand of city, state, and federal government pushing on us. So I'm doing everything I can to communicate to my politicians and to anybody that will listen. You need to ask your politicians, what are you thinking? Why are you allowing this to happen? He could say, well, I'm only one out of 100 or one out of 435. Say, I don't care. You need to step up. We all need to step up. This is the most egregious negative effect and assault on American liberty that I have ever seen in my life.
Jay Davidson, I never dreamed that I would live through something like this. And a couple of thoughts. We're getting close to the end of our podcast here, but I found this quote by Rudyard Kipling. And he said, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And so as people are listening to, you know, the news media and looking on their computers, you know, see death toll, death toll, death toll, there's some things to ask. There's questions to ask. And I think that is really good advice. And you were actually hitting several of those words just before I mentioned them. But we need to put our thinking caps on and start asking questions in order to protect freedom, protect the Constitution and the Declaration of Declaration of Independence, that I sound like Joe Biden there, Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal with these inalienable rights of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. So with that, I just wanted to mention, I got this frantic text. I think we're all getting frantic texts from people that the country's over and my gosh, freedom is gone. And I responded to this woman and I said, well, wait a minute, you're going to give up that easily? I said, you are the daughter of a World War II veteran, and thank God they didn't give up. And it was almost like just a snap of a finger. She's like, you're right. And so we have to be pushing back on this panic and this fear. Jay Davidson, your final thought.
Well, that was a pretty good statement right there. The fact is that we as individuals and citizens do have the power. We have the rights granted us under the Constitution. We've not exercised those rights. We've allowed our federal government and other governments, city and state, to run roughshod over us. I say use the Constitution, use the rights that were granted under the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and push back. You need to alert your politicians that this is not acceptable. And believe me, folks, you can have a profound impact on these people. They want to be reelected. They want that nice, cushy government job. Threaten them. I'm sorry. I don't mean that word. But tell them, hey, I'm not going to support you. I'm not going to give you money. I'm not going to vote for you. In fact, I'm going to actively go against you if you continue this kind of activity. And you have every right to demand that of them. You know what? They're your servant, not the other way around. And one final thought. As Ben Franklin said, anybody that gives up liberty for safety will have neither. Think about that. But thank you, Kim, for this opportunity.
Jay Davidson, founder, CEO of First American State Bank. I love these conversations, and I know many out there do as well. So thank you so much. This is Sounding Off with Kim Munson. We appreciate listening.